Wow, I guess I ate too much candy there. I got a little crazy. Hey, it's Halloween. I hope you're doing well. Hey, you, those of you who are in Europe and everywhere else in the world, we here in America celebrate Halloween. And, yeah, we get crazy. I just got crazy there. And if you're an adult like me, we have our parties. If you're a kid, it's door-to-door candy. Sometimes it's cookies, pastries, things like that. And Halloween is a Celtic harvest festival, and it's that's where it originates. It's a pagan event, and of course, us being a marketing society, the Americans turned it into a big marketing and moneymaker event where people go door to door, and kids get candy. Those of us who are adults dress up if we are so disposed to be a character, and we have a blast. So, hey, I love Halloween. I told you last week, it's a good time to get out and have fun. So happy Halloween to you. Hope you're doing well. Hey, always check out the Facebook page, and I'm always reminding people to check out what's been going on. I posted a really interesting article that came out earlier this week. Another very, very ancient site in India was discovered, and this is a 7,000-year-old astronomical observatory in Talaganga, India. And what makes this thing amazing is the locals have known about it for a number of years, but there's 80 huge menhirs, and menhirs are standing stones, each weighing approximately 1,000 to 2,000 pounds. These are megaliths, and they're all pointing to the heavens. And they have already acknowledged that not only is it a part of a sundial, but it's also a an observatory for observing all kinds of celestial bodies. It's just amazing what they keep finding, these ancient locations, this being an observatory. We talked a few weeks ago about an observatory that was found in Australia that was equally as old, but this one's in India. So it really shows that we do not understand our ancient history. We do not understand the science, the connection to the heavens, and how these people gained the knowledge to be observers of the heavens. You can see this, you can see the standing stones on the Facebook page. Go to Facebook, Earth Ancients, go to group, and keep checking out, keep going to that page as well as the website. Remember, the new website just went up, www.earthancients.com, and constantly posting material there, and all the shows are being slowly loaded. It's a big deal to put a show on there, because not only is the graphic placed there, but all the playback software is added to each show, so be sure to be checking that. The other thing that is interesting is when I was looking at our trip, we're going to be doing our tour to the Yucatan in April, I found that Ekbalam had been further excavated since I was there. I was there about 6 years ago, and then before that, I was there when it was just a pile of rocks, and they have discovered these very strange anthropological figures, and these are figures that are carved with various animal heads attached to their head, like a hat, or part of their body is in an animal. And this one figure that is like a mainstay for Ekbalam, because remember, if you don't know about Ekbalam, it's in northern Yucatan, and it's one of the only ruins that has these figurines that are attached to part of the main pyramid. And when they first found this and they first started uncovering it, they thought it just had part of an opening and an entrance way. And as they kept excavating, what they discovered was a whole huge section. It's about 100 feet wide by about 40 feet tall of this gigantic entranceway that was covered with these figurines of various sizes and themes is what I'm going to say. And this one figure that they have now moved to the Mareda Museum is very odd, very unusual. And I really think you should take a look at it just because of the carving. The carving is quite elegant. And go to the Facebook page and you can check it out. So, and always be checking on the Facebook page. I keep reminding you, I know some people don't think that you need to go there, but when you're interested in this material, you're hearing these guys presenting their material each week. The follow-up, or what I call the program notes, are listed on the Facebook page. Eventually, they will all be put onto the website, but for now, check out the Facebook page. You can get it. And regarding that tour, Path of the Sacred Maya is the tour, and it's coming up April 2nd through the 8th. It's going to be you fly into Mareda, but the amazing part of this tour is that we're not going to just go to one site. We're going to go to a number of sites. We're going to go to Mayapan, Ekbalam, which is a really amazing place. The Maya University, which is known as Chichen Itza. We're going to go to Kabal, which has the House of a Thousand Masks. And then to kind of top it off, we're going to go to Uxmal, which has an amazing round pyramid. It's being hosted by Sacred Earth Journeys, which is an amazing transformational tour. They will have a shaman with us, Miguel Angel Vergara will be with us, and we'll have special presentations from a number of noted experts on Maya culture and on pyramids. And if you want to join me, there's only a couple of seats, places left. Send me your an email. Send it to cliff@earthancients.com, and I will make sure that you get the information. I think we only have about 5 places left. I'm only taking about 20-25 people for the first trip because I just think it's nice to have a smaller group. So remember, April 2nd through 8th, Path of the Sacred Maya, and it's going to be a really fun time. I hope you can join me. Those of you who missed our guest last week, Valerie Uvaroff, if you would like to get his book called The Pyramid, I am going to be sending it off today and throughout the Halloween weekend. Send me an email. Well, actually, you know what? Don't send me an email. Go to the website earthancients.com, www.earthancients, ancients with an S, .com. Send me an email and just get on that list. I'm going to send out to everybody this PDF of this book, The Pyramids by Uvaroff, and it is packed with some of the latest research on what the Russians are doing with pyramid energy. And quite fascinating. As you know, if you haven't heard that program, definitely listen to him. The Russians are doing some outrageously new and unique research on pyramids, pyramid energy. And according to Uvaroff, they're using it for healing purposes, healing cancer. The book talks a little bit about that. It talks a little bit about how it raises intelligence. These are all subjects that our scientists are scratching their heads on. We just don't know about it because it's so new. We don't have the instrumentation to really see, Dan, how this energy works on the human physiology. But you can read all about it in his book, The Pyramids. Go to earthancients.com. Just put your name on, just register, and I'll be sending it out to everybody on that list. We got a few thousand people so far, and this is the last time we're going to announce it. I think we're going to start doing this because a lot of our authors do have ebooks and they like to make them available. Most of the time you need to go to Facebook, or excuse me, you need to go to Amazon and download these books. But here's one you can get for free as my gift to you for the holiday weekend. So check that out. So my guest today, and today's theme is Tutankhamun's curse. And for those of you who don't know about the curse, I'll talk a little bit about it, and then we'll bring our guest on today. This is a fascinating book. In 1922, Howard Carter discovered King Tutankhamun's tomb. He was a young man when he died, only been in power, I think, less than a decade. And when Carter opened up this tomb in Egypt, I mean, he fascinated the entire world. No one had seen a crypt, a tomb with the riches that was bestowed to a king. And there was furniture, there was gold, there was amazing artifacts that to this day are still quite unique. But what happened following the discovery of this tomb is that a number of people began dying. And so many people died in such a short period that they began to consider this a curse, an ancient curse. Of course, 1922, is the technology, science isn't really where it is today, so they still didn't know. I mean, these people were dying, and I think 16 people died within a few years. My guest today, and by the way, we have the publisher of this new book. The book's called Tutankhamun's Curse Solved. My guest today is Isaac Cohen, and Isaac is an engineer. In the late 1970s, he developed a keen interest in archaeology, and he spent the next 30 years carrying out extensive research on Egyptian archaeology. He's the past vice president of Archaeological Institute of America and has lectured widely on his research at various colleges and community associations. And this book is fascinating. Isaac, how are you doing today?
Okay, thank you.
Fantastic. Now, we have James Arthur, who's the publisher of New Research LLC. How are you, James?
Very good, Jim, Cliff. Thank you.
I'm going to call you Jim. It's easier.
That'd be fine, sure.
Before we get to Isaac and this amazing book, and by the way, this is, you, listeners, you're going to really get some fascinating information here, because this is something that I found was wonderful. And when I decided to interview Isaac, I thought that it was a good fit for our topic. But Jim, what was the interest in wanting to publish a book on Tutankhamun?
Well, we're a fairly young publishing company, and we were looking to, distinguish ourselves with some material that was distinctive, and trying to break some new ground here, and we thought this was an exciting offering, and one that can head in a lot of different directions in the future. So we found this to be a very, very exciting book to bring forth.
Okay, so this is volume one, so I can imagine there's going to be a number of other ones. I read the book, and it appears that there's a number of books that are in either the editing phase or in a state where they're about to be presented to the public in some form soon. Is that my correct understanding?
That's true. There are several more in the works, yes, following on from this one.
Fantastic. Hey, well, thank you for publishing the book. I enjoyed it, and I definitely will be looking forward to future versions of it. Isaac, let's get to you. Fantastic. I enjoyed the book, but I have to ask you, what was the interest in Tutankhamun? What was the trigger point to begin researching the specific king and the circumstances of his death?
I did not start with Tutankhamun. I was interested in the whole subject of problems that were not making sense. They came out of left field. All of a sudden, we see something here and here over there without knowing where it comes from. Here we had a very important area to be inspected, which is Egypt. There are lots of problems in Egypt archaeology, of course. Mm-hmm. But there was no answers. Why do the people die to go into a tomb? We have no answer, so they invented an answer. They say the curse. Well, this is really ridiculous. There is no curse. There is no existence of cursing in scientific fields. So I started dig into Egyptian archaeology, not specifically the tomb, but in general. And the more I read the original discoveries of the archaeologists, the more questions cropped up. We have a great difference in the size of pyramids. Why do we need such a huge pyramid like the one of the Giza? There was no answer. That's why I had the time in my life at that time. That's why I followed it and read and read and read all the reports that ancient archaeologists had submitted.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the trigger points for the theme of Tutankhamun's curse was the death of Lord Carnarvon, who died just 6 weeks after the opening of the tomb. And this was very suspicious because he wasn't an old person. Also, the descriptions of the deaths of the other people, 16, and then maybe there were some other people that weren't present at the opening but maybe had come in, are very suspicious. Is that what really began your investigation into the causation of their death, or was it something else that you felt was not covered in general reporting of these people's passing?
At the beginning, I thought about nothing. I did not know why the people died. Really, Lord Carnarvon was dead at 57. He entered that tomb. He was of the original ones. And 46 days later, he was out. Mm-hmm. But as I inspected all over the records of in the literature, there was another archaeologist, Arthur Mace, who died at age 54. But he was active in Egyptian archaeology since 1914. By the time he came to be a part of the team that excavating Tutankhamun, he was already not feeling well at all. according to the reports that had been written about him. Mm-hmm. When you go further in the descriptions, there was a very famous archaeologist, James Breasted, very famous, who was also not able to function properly, and he did die in 1935. There was another archaeologist who did not enter the tomb of Tutankhamun. He was a Frenchman, a French archaeologist by the name Bourrion. He died at the age 54, even though he did not enter Tutankhamun's tomb.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Other people, I do mention these four because I had information or written information that in the record of the troubles that they had with their health during the time that they were alive.
That's interesting. Yeah.
There was other authors that mentioned 20 other people that were in, unfortunately, died in the
mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's talk about the symptoms. You go into great detail in your book on the symptoms, which are quite unique and really cause us to be suspicious as to the causation. Can you describe the typical type of, without being too gruesome, how these people died, what the symptoms were?
Well, in each one it's a little different, but I will read to you what happened to Lord Carnarvon. You will find it in page 4 or 5 of my book.
Right.
He had very chills and high fever, which abated overnight. And the next day, he was almost normal. And the next day, came back, the high fever, chills, etc., etc. As the description in page 5. Now, doctors, they were called in, of course. They had no answer because they did not see the type of sickness that it was involved. They had no experience with this type of sickness when it was repeated over and over in different people, different types of symptoms. And that mm-hmm. is one thing that pushed me to go into the literature, medical literature, to see what is expected from this type of exposure.
Mm-hmm.
As I read more and more, and I found finally that all the symptoms, incidentally, in 1923, no doctor knew what the symptoms were.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go into the literature, medical literature, modern, you can realize then there was one answer. one answer, and the answer was radioactive exposure. Now, it was incredible for
me.
Yeah,
and that's the amazing part of this research, is that these people, and you show it quite in detail, that these people died of radioactive exposure.
Yes.
Before we get into the details of this, I want you to tell us a little bit about Howard Carter. Now, it appears that Carter doesn't have the same symptoms, and he's right there opening this tomb, and he's right in the face of it. But although he lived 16 years after the discovery, his health was just terrible. Can you talk a little bit about how he suffered? Because he, according to you, suffered similar effects, but maybe to a lesser degree, but same types of symptoms. Is that correct?
Well, yes. What I learned from the medical books, the symptoms are not always the same. It depends on the nature of the person, on the health in which they are at that moment. So we get different symptoms at different times. Carter survived up to, I think, he was 65. But he has definitely the bug of the sickness.
Mm. So as I read your book, I was amazed to reveal the excerpts from various friends and relatives and even his physicians saying that he is constantly not unwell. He is in bed, recuperating. So even though he probably had just an outstanding constitution, this exposure to radiation eventually got to him.
Yes.
So,
it worked on it over the years. I understand that this sickness, it is not exactly the same with each person. Each person has a different constitution, and he is exposed to radiation at different times in his life and at different parts of his body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating. Now, you, without getting into a lot of detail here, it's obvious that the ancient Egyptians had a technology that we do not understand. Without getting into the next book, can you talk a little bit about what you feel their level of sophistication was? Because obviously, we're talking about radioactive isotopes that are placed unknowingly or knowingly in these crypts, the King's Tutankhamun's crypt. So, what can you tell us a little bit? Because this is a real amazing revelation to tell us that the evidence of radiation exposure is apparent here.
Yes, yes. The fact is, where did this radiation come? That's a big question. There is only one answer that we can logically expect. The answer is the gods, the Egyptian gods. When I did my research, that opened a completely different avenue. We are now with the gods. We have many books written by ancient Egyptians that explain the activities of the gods. And what is most important, that we have to take these writings as serious. not say, they dream. They were telling us that the gods that came flying down. They had airplanes. Possibly the word is not airplanes or the flying capacity. They used to leave Egypt at night. They flew away during the night. All of this is being explained in the books of the Egyptians. And during the night, they stopped with some places in space where they, when other gods were working, they brought them the food that the Egyptians offered at the temples in Egypt. According to that book, there were 12 different, I call them satellites, that were visited every night and supplied with supplies, or especially food, for the other gods that were working over there. In the morning, they would come back into Egypt and land on top of the temples, which had a flat ceiling or roof. Yes, this normally would not be believable. However, the Egyptians were not lying to us or lying to themselves. They did report what they saw in their terminology, in their understanding of what they saw. The fact is, we have many places with radioactive activity around all the tombs and outside of the tombs, also in the pyramids.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the important aspects that you describe in your book, which really clarifies this radiation sickness, is the survivors of the first atomic bomb in recent history, and that's at Hiroshima, Japan.
Yes.
And
yes,
you describe the fate of those that survived the initial blast, and how their deaths occurred because of doses of radiation, higher levels. You get into the various levels, rads of radiation with quite about an amount of detail, because you're an engineer. Of course, this is probably fascinating to you. But for those of us who are not engineers, can you explain a little bit in these deaths of Carter and his excavation team, and how,
well,
it's so obvious that they did die of radiation poisoning?
Well, we have to distinguish. Hiroshima is an explosion of atomic bomb. Egypt is not an explosion. It is a place to store radioactive waste.
Mm-hmm.
We have in Egypt hundreds of thousands of containers that were found buried in the tombs or otherwise, full of what seems to be mud. And it is mud, because they get the mud from the Nile. This is interesting, because the U.S. government is doing almost the same thing in nowadays. Mm-hmm. The Department of Energy has been mixing earth, let's say, with atomic waste. They had mentioned it.
Right.
For the Washington, it was kitty litter, and they announced it about 2 years ago.
So government is doing now is they're using kitty litter, which has a composition of clay and other binding properties in to store radioactive waste. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's mm-hmm. And they made a mistake. Instead of taking regular kitty litter, they did take some, for once, other substance that had included vegetable substance. Mm. When vegetable in the mixture caught fire, it was not neutralized by the dirt. Mm. And 22 people, as I reported in my book, were hurt in the explosion.
Interesting. Now, the point that you're making in that description is that you discovered that the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians, did the same thing. They used mud and maybe some other binding elements to trap this waste product. And then they buried them in catacombs and out in the desert. Is that correct?
Well, the Egyptians had nothing to do with all of this. They were ignorant people, looking at their gods, waiting for the orders of the gods.
Hmm.
The gods did brought into Egypt atomic waste, which was then mixed up with the mud of the Egypt, because the Nile every year overflows, or did overflow in those days on the country, and bringing it mud. The source of the radioactivity in Egypt. But there is another aspect of it that we have to acknowledge. These people filled up the jars, thousands of jars, which we still have in England, in Egypt. At a certain point, one group of gods left Egypt. This is historical. Another, about 100, 200 years thereafter, another group of gods came in. Well, all of these sounds hysterically crazy. Yes, but it is if you analyze the history of Egypt. And the comings and goings, and the because there are many books that have been written by archaeologists to give us the history of Egypt for the past 4,000 BC to AD.
Okay. I want to talk about the gods here in a second, because that's fascinating. But before we do that, I want you to talk a little bit about what Howard Carter discovered. And not only was it the corpse of Tut that was quite odd looking. But also you describe the corpse and the appearance of Seti the First, and these kings were buried over 3,000 years ago. And so my yes. question to you is, what can you tell us? You actually describe, can you explain a little bit about both Tut and Seti the First's appearance when they were unveiled from their linen?
Well, Seti the First has more or less must have more or less the same experience of Tutankhamun. Tutankhamun, for example, he had a black burnt face, as well as a number of other places of the body. The Seti the First also had. Seti had no hair. They lost his hair. Tutankhamun lost his hair also. That was not something that the Egyptians usually do. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm sorry, I retract. Not do at any time. This hints that they were exposed to radiation.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the photographs you show, I mean, Tut's face is almost charred, like
yes.
he was in an oven or something. And
yeah,
can you describe the effects of radiation in a zero air condition? It's quite fascinating. And I think it explains to our audience how this these bodies were appeared like, the way they did.
Well, the radiation is a very big subject, naturally. It was unknown to all of us until 1944 or for 1945. So this, when we check through the Egyptian history, the only source where they would have come, it is through the king, through the gods. When we go back our own history, there are many times when it was suggested that these happenings could have been just dreamt up by people. The Egyptians would not dream up as an insult to the gods to say they are bringing this or they're doing this. The Egyptian would have not known and absolutely not about anything about radiation. In fact, we did not know radiation until 1945.
Right, but is it your contention that these gods left this radiation, this waste, this radioactive waste around 3,000 years ago? Or was it something, and we're going to talk about the mass graves of land animals and water animals, fish and things like that. But is it your contention that these this waste was had been there for thousands of years before Seti and Tut had been in power, or was it something that happened during their reign?
No, that was during, let's say, 2,000-3,000 BC. It was not during the later part of in the Egyptian country or in their archaeology.
Mm-hmm.
Tutankhamun was a tomb that was forgotten by the early gods because they were trying, after filling up these jars or by the thousands, as I said, they took the step of relieving, going back to the places where they placed all of this and pulling away the jars with the radioactive mixture in them. What were they doing with it? We do not really know. We can surmise by the aspects that we see. It seems, and it is supported by the facts, that they filled up, they created a mixture of something in usually in the sarcophagi. This sarcophagi was considered to be, by them, to be a container. They put radioactive stuff, they put inside bones. That's why we see lots of skeletons that were chopped up into bones. Why bones? Bones is the source of calcium and potassium. They would put all over there in the mixture, and they did something with it. We do not know what happened later. Obviously, they pulled them away. We know that they entered all the tombs that they had worked on and pulled whatever they did, whatever the final product was. We do not know.
Okay. Radioactive waste brings up all kinds of possibilities. And from your description of these gods, this radioactive waste, it appears from your description, is from their ships. Is that what you would guess at? Did you do an analysis of any of this waste? I guess it's hard to do that, but is that your assumption, is that this waste was from their ships?
Perhaps, yes. Also, for more, there is another aspect. About 20 years ago, thereabouts, there was a study or discussion in this country, because we create thousands of tons of waste every month, every year. The question was, what shall we do with all this waste? Because it is dangerous. Of course, the government decided to concentrate the waste into sinkholes in Nevada, I think it was Yucca Mountain. Then there was a discussion, if we leave it in our country, in our ground, it might explode again. What other options do we have? Well, there was an option that we can send the waste into a plane and fly it into space. The object was, we cannot do that because we do not know whether they are inhabited by other people. When we send the active waste into XYZ place, we can kill quite a few people. We do not want to do this. Mm-hmm. These people, these Egyptian kings, they did not send the waste by itself. They came with them and tried to neutralize them in Egypt. And then whatever they did, I do not know. I do not know that they pulled it away from Egypt.
Okay, that's fascinating. If you're enjoying this program and you've enjoyed our past programs, I want to remind you that this Earth Ancients series is sponsored by Gaia. And Gaia is offering Earth Ancient listeners a whole new wonderful package on their streaming media website. There's a series on the power of the pyramids. There's a number of pyramid series by people like Dave Wilcock. Graham Hancock has a lot to say. Michael Tellinger, Nassim Harriman, and just the list goes on and on and on. Top researchers, top authors. When you support Gaia, you support Earth Ancients. And the program you can go to is gaia.com/Earth Ancients. And they're offering a monthly program that starts at 99 cents. And then after the first month, it's about $9 after that. And you have hundreds of amazing programs to hear and see. It's Gaia, GAIA.com/ yes. Earth Ancients. And you'll see a special program just for you, the Earth Ancient listeners. Please support them. When you support them, you support Earth Ancients. Please do that. Thanks.
Thank you.
So, I want to talk a little bit about these mass grave sites that you uncovered in the desert. And you basically determined that these animals, land animals and water animals, were irradiated in some manner. And we're not talking a few hundred baboons, crocodiles, hippopotamus, and other animals. We're talking thousands. Can you talk a little bit about that and how they may have been irradiated?
Oh, yes. This is very important to realize. In Egypt, a number of animals, fish, birds, even plants, trees, have been eradicated. They do not exist anymore. Egypt used to be known to as the country of the crocodiles. There was thousands of crocodiles. There is not a single one nowadays. They are all buried in the desert, a number of miles away of the Nile. The same thing with birds. We are talking about 5 to 10 million birds. The public is not aware of the extent that is involved in animal slaughter. And all of this is because of the radiation. Especially the birds. I read some of them considered to be 10 million ibises or 500,000 hawks. And the baboons are the most pathetically we realize now. The baboons are very intelligent animals. You can teach them certain actions, and they will perform exactly it. In the baboons, they use them, unfortunately. I feel sorry when I read or talk about that. They use them to carry radioactive waste cans from place to place. Of course, they will die in due time in a very severe type of sickness. and we have no baboons at all in Egypt. We have them all in burials. In fact, in my book, I showed you pictures of the baboon burials. The important to see is the baboon were taken and placed in a block of cement. They were buried in cement. Then they took that block and put it in the opening in the mountain. That means stone. After they put the block inside in the stone, they will be covered with other stones and plastered over. Why do they have this type an extraordinarily burial technique? Because the poor baboons were completely hit by the radioactivity because of their function, of the work that they were forced to do.
That's fascinating. Are you saying that this radiation discharge seeped into the Nile and other land forms in ancient Egypt, or is it just that they were close to the exhaust of these machines that these gods had that poisoned them? What do you suspect?
Well, I did not study other countries. I cannot give you an affirmative answer. But it is most logically to be expecting that the other countries have been invaded also. We see places that are very questionable, which is most probably, will there be the same gods? We do not know. But we do not, incidentally, we do know from the reports that other countries have similar situations, not as accentuated as in Egypt, because in Egypt there were very few few advantages for them. The mud was the most important item that they needed. Of course, archaeologists, when they dig, they don't give a damn about mud. Well, they are correct. What is the big deal to write about mud? But that mud, it is the element that the gods needed to mix with the active waste.
Fascinating. This is it's really quite amazing what you've uncovered here. I want to bring up something that you talk very quickly about in your book. You think, and I can't remember what chapter it was, but you say that you believe the Egyptians had electricity. Now, nuclear power plants today produce electricity. Isn't there a possibility that some of these ruined buildings that we see in Egypt could have been a generator for electricity? And this is...
Yes.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, the Egyptians had electricity. No ifs, ands, or buts. But I must correct myself. It's not the Egyptians that had. They had no knowledge about it. It is the gods. Incidentally, I'm sorry to interrupt like the thought. When we are talking about gods in Egypt, we are going to about between 3,500 to 5,000 people. These were the gods. No, it was not one or 10 or 15 gods. There were thousands of them that used to come. And if you follow the Egyptian history, there are times where the group of the gods leaves Egypt. We have a mess in Egypt. Everything is destroyed because before the gods leave, they destroy everything. And another group of gods come. We have to see, we see completely different architecture. We have the pyramids with the first group of the gods, and later on another group with a different type of pyramids. All the pyramids are not exactly the same. No way.
Yeah. There's so many unusual buildings in Egypt. The Grand Giza, known as the Cheops Pyramid, is built with megalithic-sized stones that we've had people on the program, other engineers, say that the only way they could have been cut was with the machinery because they're just so precisely aligned.
Correct.
You saying that these are alien in form? Or are you saying that the Egyptians learned the technology to build these megalithics?
No way, sir. The Egyptians had nothing to do with it. They are the tools of the gods. We are calling gods, but they are aliens.
Okay. That's fascinating. I don't tend to prescribe to the ancient alien theory, but when I look at your evidence, this is like a mind-blowing evidence of radiation poisoning and something that's been going on for thousands of years. Would you say that this poisoning is still evident today? Because the radioactive isotopes take thousands. Isn't it 10,000 years? Or, I mean, it's like thousands
and depends,
thousands of years.
It depends upon the element with which you started this. But yes, it takes 10,000 and more than 10,000. That's why I asked the permission to address the new minister of for archaeology in Egypt. He came to appointed to his post about 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. At that time, just before he came, there was a report that some people found another room behind the rooms of Tutankhamun. And there was a big outcry that they want to break into that wall in order to find the room behind it. I was flabbergasted because if there was another room, it would mean that there would radioactivity in that room. You see, the best way to protect yourself against radioactivity is to stand behind stone, behind walls. Because the radioactivity, you can consider it to be small balls that are flying through the air and hitting the wall or the stone. They cannot penetrate very far into stone. So they penetrate very little, or a quarter inch mostly, and die over there. That's why we can examine, test the walls or the stones for and penetration of radioactive balls. And when we do that, we see that I have in the book the layout of the tomb of Tutankhamun. You will see between each room, there are four rooms. Between each four room, there the door that connected one to the other was covered up or filled up with stones. Why? Because they do not want the radiation from the room, from one room, to go into the other room. So, if they insist to open the new room, let me call it, that is an invitation for the radiation to come through the opening that they will do. When it is closed, if there is radiation, it will be absorbed by the stone that is in place. So I implore the Minister of Archaeology not to permit to open the door or to open the wall. And I am very, very pleased to say that after the new minister took power, about 2 weeks or 3 weeks later, he declared that he will not allow the wall to be broken into the other room.
Did you explain to him, obviously you must have explained to him what you had discovered. Did you send him a copy of your book, or was it just more of a just general?
I did not talk to him. I intended to talk to him, but when he declared that he will not allow the breaking in through the wall, that I was very satisfied.
Okay.
And I
have to ask you. I have to ask you, Isaac, on this point, and I find it important to ask. Do you have any evidence of current archaeological digs in Egypt? There must be, and I know of a couple. John Ward, who we've had on our program, is doing work on Seti the First. He's an Egyptologist. But is there any other evidence of any other people getting radiation sickness that you know of?
No. I think the ancient gods, let me say, pulled the stuff out, and whatever is left in Egypt is under control. There is no worry. No worry. I am saying it. There is no worry to go to Egypt. The archaeological group or the minister know well, and they have very many engineers that know exactly what radiation means. There is
so
no problem.
This is the big question. And this is one of the many, many problems I have personally with the powers that be in Egypt, is that they know that there was advanced science there. They've discovered it. And if I understand what you're saying correctly, is they have tested and scanned these various crypts and discovered that there is fallout from radiation. And so I don't know if Tut's tomb is still open and available for viewing, or any like Seti the First, and I don't know how many other ancient crypts from that time period are open and available, but would you say they know? They probably do know, right? That's what you're saying.
Yes, and this, and I think that is the reason why some of tombs or some of the pyramids are off limit. You cannot go to certain places, which okay. is, and I believe it is because of that, because the Egyptian authorities, the higher ups, do know it is dangerous to go to this tomb or to this ruin or to this destroyed pyramid. We have about 110 or 118 pyramids in Egypt. The first, let me say roughly, the first 10 pyramids that were built, they were no burials whatsoever. But after that, after the 10th, all of the pyramids that were built had been destroyed. The first 10 are not destroyed, except I think the 8th one or the 9th one, I think there is a destruction.
That's fascinating. We're getting close to the end of our show. I have a couple more questions. The speculation, I mean, I can imagine my audience is kind of going, this is amazing. And this opens up so many possibilities. You describe these jars of radioactive waste that are located in these catacombs.
All type of jars. There must have been a fantastic industry manufacturing jars. Great many of them are still in the place. In the big, let me see, just a minute. In the first pyramid, there are sections not in the pyramid, but outside of the pyramid, underground, I don't want to say a million, but there are thousands and thousands of the jars with their contents. Now, the contents, as we learned now by the U.S. government telling us, when we mix the mixture with a mix, with a waste, with dirt or kitty litter, whatever, we stop the radiation from the mixture. When it's very possible that it's what they are doing.
Okay, when you say the first pyramid, are you talking about the Grand Cheops pyramid, the biggest pyramid?
Oh, no. The Cheops is not the first pyramid. Let me tell you.
What was the name of that first one?
Is Zoser.
Oh, Zoser. Okay.
Cheops is 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the 8th pyramid.
Okay. Fascinating. Wow, there's so much more we could talk about regarding radiation. You speculate it was from ships. I have to ask you, that a couple of the engineers we've had on this program speculate that the pyramids, because of the composition of the galleries, what they call the interior galleries and how they were set up, they believe that the pyramids were generators, energy generators, that may have produced electricity in some form that we don't understand. Is it possible that these pyramids were generators, or are you saying that the no. level of radiation that you have described could only be from a propulsion system?
No, they are not a generator of electricity or power. I read that that assertion, but it is not. I'm working on another book about the pyramids. They have very specific reasons to build the pyramids. Up to the first 10, 11 ones that I mentioned, the pyramids thereafter are of a different size, and they all are destroyed completely. The first 10 are not destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
There is, but in the first 10, you do not find a sarcophagus. People's bones, for example. Nothing. There was no burial the first 10 pyramids. The burials, theoretically, happened afterwards. I say theoretically because we have never found a mummy or a dead person in the pyramids. We have 110 pyramids. They are the ones, the real ones, because realize most of the time, next to the big ones, there are very one, two, or three small ones. They are called the Queen's Pyramids. I doubt that they were queens. We are dealing with a group of very sophisticated people who are doing things that we do not know. Some aspects, yes, make sense. We can repeat them, because other aspects, no. Don't forget, they are people, incidentally, exactly like us. We have their pictures. We have their bones. We have their layouts. We have their history. It's completely clean. We know all about them. That.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this book is Tutankhamun's Curse Solved. It's volume one of Research in Egyptology by Isaac Cohen. This is a great book. You can get it on Amazon, and it is available. It's got a lot of detail, a lot of real amazing revelation, some very, very good research, and it's got some great photos too. In the last few minutes we have, Isaac, can you tell us, without giving away your next book, what you believe the impact of these visitations were in ancient Egypt? Because to leave such monstrosities in terms of pyramids is a real question mark. Do you have anything you can kind of leave us with?
Well, yes, it is a monstrosity, and for all these years that passed, we have been trying to say that the Egyptians did this and the Egyptians did that. No, the poor thing. They were the serfs to the managers. that came in out of the blue, who had flying capacity. We have it in writing. It is very important to realize that gods came to Egypt and chose to Egypt instead of another country because of a few things. The Nile. The Nile creates millions of tons of mud. The mud is the most important thing to neutralize radioactive waste.
Hmm.
And secondly, it came there because of the desert, because there were no people living there. They can put them there without hurting people. Although many people were killed through this, we have very many places where dead bodies are thrown in. They are not normal king. They are the regular people who were killed during these experiments of the gods.
Hmm. Fantastic. Wonderful book. Again, you can get it on Amazon. Jim, when can we expect volume 2 of Isaac's book to come out?
Yeah, we're thinking probably in about 6 months. We have a volume that will be explaining the destruction of all of the pyramids that Isaac just mentioned, and some others as well that should be coming shortly thereafter. If you don't mind my mentioning, the book is available, yes, at Amazon in all major countries. And also there's a link to that through our website, which is tutscurse.com.
Tutscurse.com. I'll go ahead and post it on the Facebook page and let people know about it. Wow, a real eye-opener and a fun Halloween weekend surprise. I want to thank you both for joining me, and I do expect to have you on the program again when you do release this next book, because it will provide further evidence for advanced technology in the ancient past of Egypt. Fascinating. Thank you very much, Isaac and Jim, and we'll look forward to hearing more from you.
Thank you to you very much to having me on the program. Thank you, sir.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Cliff.
Thanks, Jim. We'll be in touch. So that is quite an eye-opener, as you can imagine. If you get a chance, go to I'm going to post the photograph of this book with a link to the Amazon page. But if you look at the cover of this book, they actually place an image of Tut's head, his mummified head. And you can see it looks like a charred amber. And I've always wondered about why it seems to be like it's been burnt. And according to Isaac Cohen, this is the result of radiation. High heat radiation in that crypt that he was buried in. So many other questions that we have, but the best way to do it is to buy the book, Amazon.com. All right, well, that's it for today's show. Join us next week. We are going to be talking about the Statue of Liberty, the essence of the statue, and also quite a bit of background information on its creation. So join us next week. Hope you have a great day. Have fun. Happy Halloween.